This is the Web Weekly, episode 4 for August 14th, 2010. Browsers, fonts, and hosting. Oh my. In this week's episode, Firefox Cap Can, HTML5 boilerplate, Google Fonts preview tool, and to host or not to host as a web designer. That is the question. You're listening to the Web Weekly, the podcast for all things web. My name is Jonas Flint, and with me today, as usual, is my co-host, Mr. Kevin Dees. Even when he's on his knees, he's taller than trees. How are you, Kevin?
Oh, jeez.
You liked that, didn't you? I was keeping that like under the hat just for the podcast.
Somebody's going to turn that around and make it into something it shouldn't be. But I'm tall. I can't help it. What can I say?
Yeah, Kevin is taller than an oak tree, and I'm like 4'2" Filipino guy. So we kind of balance each other out as far as the height issue goes. So,
oh, man, it's been a busy week, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Hectic. A lot of things going on. So, but, you know, they say the busy soul is a happy soul, you know what I mean? So,
and tired at the same time.
yeah, it's been...
Jeez, man.
It's been a pretty good week. I think I'm finally starting to set things up here. I've decided to go completely Mac. Well, wait, I'm lying. Completely Mac with virtual machines. I'm going to have Windows virtual machines. I signed up for the BizSpark a little bit. Well, I signed up for BizSpark like you had suggested.
Right.
And they give you access to some software because I have a startup that I've been working on for some time with a client, you know, anacronym.com. And through Anacronym, I was actually able to qualify for BizSpark. You qualified for WebDoc, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so now I have access to virtual machines because, Microsoft, they want you to purchase a full license to have a virtual machine. I'm like, good grief, that's ridiculous. I think they should have like a licensing fee for virtual machines, you know, a different price associated with it. But, you know, I could see.
Well, that's the reason they have BizSpark.
Yeah.
Is so folks like you and me don't have to deal with the huge overhead if you don't have, investment capital to work with. So.
Yeah, shell out large amounts of cash for 4,000 OSs just to run on virtual machines.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's been a good thing. So it's, you know, actually changing the way I'm going to work, my workflow. So I'm ranging my monitors and ranging
my desk. Are you going to Beer Idiots tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, cool. Going there.
It's nice.
Well,
little...
you know that. I'm going to go with you. So.
Yeah. Nice little meetup.
Yeah. Yeah, we... Beer Idiots is a get together of.
Or Beardiots.
Is it Beardiots?
I think it's
Beardiots. Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah.
It's a get together that Greenville, South Carolina local web designers and developers do. They get together and.
There's a few of them. We just started the refresh too here. I went to. And
yeah.
You were busy
that?
With that. It was good. Evan spoke from Orange Coat.
Uh huh.
And he did good. And then. Swamp Fox spoke for
Joy.
Yeah. He spoke for a while, but who was
Laura McPherson from? Well, she used to be North Star Creative, but
she's just her own name now.
Freelanced, yeah.
She's freelance now. So.
Good talk.
Yeah, it was really good for the first setup. Free pizza, so everybody's kind of happy and
nice.
It was nice because there was about 25 people there, so. It wasn't super crowded, and you could hear folks when you're talking to them, you know, and it didn't feel like pass out your business card kind of.
Yeah, you know, hey, how are you? I'm a suit and tie, and here's my card.
Yeah, exactly. So it was very nice to just be able to talk about what you're working on, that kind of thing. You just get to meet people.
Yeah, well, that's great. I planned on making it. I couldn't make it because I realized that Meet the Teacher night for my daughter was there,
yeah.
and there was no way I was going to pick a web conference over...
Yeah,
you know, meet the teacher night.
It's supposed to be monthly, so
yeah, I'll go every week, and then
good.
You know, Beer Idiots, you know,
yeah. and really, these kind of meetups are all over the place. I mean, I would really encourage anyone to go and check out any kind of meetup around them. It's a really good way to get to know people in the industry, and the web industry itself is very tight.
Yeah.
Tight knit. Like, if you're in it and you're in the community, you really have access to a lot of very cool people, and you probably might not know about them in your own town if you don't already participate in those things. You'd be surprised too who's in your hometown.
Yeah, and you know what I like about the web community? Usually, you know, when you meet up with your peers. We don't even consider them competitors.
Yeah.
They actually tend to end up your business partners.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. you know, the web is something that we tend to it tends to be feast or famine. You know, you tend to get a lot of work or no work. You know, and when you have a lot of work, you really need to know some people so that you can pass some of that work on. And you know, when you go out and meet your peers, you many times start passing work to each other, and it ends up being really,
yep.
really good, you know, mutually beneficial. So I love the web community. And, you know, look around your local area for, you know, meetups, meeting groups, get-togethers. If you're a Drupal developer, you know, there are Drupal meetups. You know, I mean, I don't personally go to those, you
yeah.
know.
Well, even before I moved down here to Greenville, I lived in an old
backyard,
you know,
boo hick town with all yeah. the cows and pigs and chickens.
right.
Yeah.
You know, I lived out in the country. You know, it's a good 35 minute drive just to come out and come to these meetups, but it's worth it.
Right.
You know, so even if you're out in the middle of nowhere, to find time to find a place to meet up with folks, you know, it's not for. Not everybody's going to have a location. I mean, I understand that. But if you can find one, it's definitely worth the drive, you know.
Yeah, in fact, you know, Kevin lived out there. Where was it? You're in Clinton, right?
Yeah.
In Clinton, and he came to one of these meetup groups. That's how I actually met Kevin. And he was wearing overalls and had a straw hat and straw dangling from his mouth. No, he didn't.
But, I was about to say, oh dear, you're already making up stories.
Right,
I was an oak tree, and now I'm walking around like
right.
an old hick. You know?
No, but they are really good, and you know, web designers are really good about setting up these types of meetings. So, you know, I encourage you to look in your local area for these type of things if you're a freelancer or a designer looking to either get started or meet some people or get more work or what have you.
So what do we have on the outline for the news this week?
Well, okay, we have several things. Last week I promised everybody that we'd talk about the Firefox tabs.
Yeah, talk about those a little bit. All I did was watch a video on this stuff.
You watched the
and
demo
this is,
video.
This is beta, alpha kind of software going on.
You know, well,
so
look up the name of that for me because I'm slacking, and you know what? I'm starving. I'm going to do this. Don't you judge me, but I'm going to open up my patty melt while we're talking.
Okay.
But yeah, Firefox is working on a tab system for Firefox 4. Thank you, man. This is my Checkers 2 burgers for $3. they're working on a tab system where you can actually... It kind of works like Expose for the Mac, where you can view all of your tabs and group all of your tabs together logically. Now, if you're a guy like me, this is fantastic. Although I've recently been using Google Chrome, and I hope that they come out with something like this with Google Chrome. But I'm the type of guy that I'll have 3 monitors, and I'll have a browser in every single monitor, and I'll have, like, 19 tabs in each browser.
Yeah.
You've seen how it works.
Would just be nice if there was a way to organize. I mean, last week's podcast, you know, we were having trouble getting the right information, the right place. And this new Firefox thing, you can share your tabs via social sharing kind of tool where you can move it around, or at least that's in the outline for what's going to happen.
Yeah, it looks really well. I haven't actually tested it out. I watched
Tab Candy is what it's called.
Tab Candy, right.
So if you search for Firefox 4 Tab Candy, you can find a demo of this video.
Right. You'll find it's a pretty good demo, and you know, he'll tell you that it's not completely fleshed out and it's work in progress.
Right. They really do have a lot of really cool ideas for it. You know, meta groups for tabbing. If you imagine it, it's basically folders for tabs.
Yeah.
And then you have a nice little GUI interface to work with to organize your tabs. So if you're, say, shopping, you have a shopping window, and you drag other windows into that window, and it creates a group for you.
Yeah.
I like the new iPhone folders, really.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You can minimize your tab group and then open up another tab group.
Right.
You can arrange very easily tabs according to group. And a problem I've had with the tab system, I've tried the recently... Well, let me stick to one thing. The problem I had with the tab system was that I have so many tabs open, because maybe I have massive ADD or something. But I get so many tabs open, I'm not a regular tab closer, that my tabs get so small to the point where it's, you know, just the favicon.
Right.
And a lot of times I'll just accidentally close a tab.
Right.
It drives me up the wall.
Right.
You know?
So this
and
is a perfect solution. Right?
Yeah, it's perfect. I hope, you know, they really flesh it out, and I hope, like I said, I hope Google Chrome can adopt it. But
oh yeah, I'm fairly certain that folks are going to come out with other solutions for, you know, doing this type of nesting tabs. You know, it'll be nice to have that hierarchical kind of setup for tabs instead of where it's just everything's on the same hierarchy.
Great idea, and
yep. Others will pick it up. I'm pretty sure if folks have been so excited about Chrome that they've changed their browser around to compete with that, this is going to change.
It'll increase.
I mean, think about it. Safari put their tabs on the top of their browser for a long time. You know, when Chrome first came out, like during their new release of, I think, Safari 4 when it came out.
Yeah.
You know, they went that route, and then, you know, people got complaints, so now that... But it's really, I think it's going to be a game changer. I really do.
I really do, too. I do, too. You know what I think
it's
nice?
It's like bookmarking, except volatile instead of non-volatile.
Yeah.
In a way. Like, if you're thinking in terms of memory.
And it's good for workflow. That's what I like about things like this, is just on a sense of workflow, it's very easy to minimize this group of tabs and open up this group of tabs and minimize this group of tabs. You know, it's just very in sequence with what we know already. So,
mm-hmm.
Looking forward to it. You know, definitely check that out. We'll have some links to it on our show notes to that video mainly. You know, but you can do a search, of course, on the search engine of your choice.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how people use that. But yeah, Tab Candy for Firefox 4.
Yeah. You know, what I like about, you know, ever since... Firefox started to give Firefox started to give IE a run for its money with an alternative browser, and then Google Chrome cropped up. You know, there's been so much competition in the browser space that browsers, and now Safari for Windows,
right?
The browser space, they're just getting so competitive, and browsers they're coming up with so many ideas. They're optimizing the browsers, you know, now with IE9.
Yeah, have you seen the latest preview for that? The IE9?
I looked over your shoulder.
I think it's preview 4. I'm not sure what the number is exactly, but they have a lot of really good stuff. If you go to the blogs.msdn.com, you can find updates for all the IE stuff under the IE section, probably. I have the URL is blogs.msdn.com//b/IE, and I'm guessing that's how you'll get to it. If you can't, just do a search on the MSDN site. But
and again, on our show notes, we'll include that link.
Right,
so.
But this is an article that I have here that talks about the new stuff in IE and the platform previewer. And the platform previewer is a little bit different than the regular browser because instead of getting a URL bar, you have to basically open a web page, so you would go to like File, Open, instead of just having a URL bar.
Right.
And so it can be a little bit confusing when you first use it because you feel like you don't have features. But it's a preview. You know, they're just giving you the new Trident engine, I guess, is what they're still going to call it, Trident, I'm guessing.
Hmm.
And so anyway, some of the stuff they in the new IE9, you probably already heard of some of this, is the hardware acceleration for HTML5, really lightning speed when you're dealing with some serious HTML5 SVG rendering and that kind of thing.
That's
so
great. I heard it was like,
oh,
I looked
so
at somebody's
faster.
Tweet. Yeah, I heard also in somebody's tweet that it had, it like, it was like 95 on the ACID 3 test or something like that. Or
right, it's 93 or 95 of 100 on the ACID 3 test. So they're getting there.
Wow.
And then
that's great. I mean,
right. And then the frame rate's a lot faster than most of these other, like for imagery rendering on IE9. It's just really good. Native JavaScript information integration. You really have to check out this blog post.
Yeah.
It's really great. It covers a lot of the new stuff and just like the new speed of the JavaScript engine. It's extremely fast. It's among top browsers now.
Yeah,
it's even faster than I believe. Yes, it's faster, according to this, than Firefox 4. But they'll probably get Firefox 4 down a bit more since it's still in alpha.
Yeah, Firefox 4, you know, with the betas with Firefox, you know, I've heard that there weren't any drastic speed improvements, which is concerning to me, because that the memory and the speed for Firefox were just big issues with me,
right.
At least.
Right, yeah, after using Chrome and all this other stuff, it's just the speed is, you know, and especially once you add a bunch of plugins and add-ons, it's just slow. You know, it feels like it's weighed down, and you can feel the cargo that you've installed on that thing. You know, so
awesome, great things coming for IE9, folks. Keep an eye out for that. I'm glad that Microsoft is. You know, kudos to Microsoft for getting off their duffs and
right. You know, and it is. I used to do IT, you know, and do computer repair and that stuff. And if IE is good enough, I can see IT professionals not bothering with Firefox to put them on these computers if it's secure enough and if it's fast enough and it supports all the features that they really need to keep phone calls from coming in.
Yeah.
There's no reason to put Firefox or these other browsers on folks. In fact, there would be a reason to keep them from doing that, just because the more software you have, the more holes you have.
Yeah.
And if IE9 does it, you know, I could see IE really eating the browser market share.
Yeah, well, they already have the momentum now. There's still the top browser out there. And,
right.
You know, I mean, they have a huge advantage in that. You know, it's the dominant operating system still, you know, and by default. Well, I think now they're changing the default clause with the browser, but
The West, isn't it? Or the East, or the yeah.
Right.
It's in Europe and Asia where they're enforcing you pick your own browser for whenever you install your operating system. You're given a choice between IE and all these other things.
Right. You hear that close?
Yeah, yeah. And so
I guess I haven't completely closed Skype, but that's all right. You know, people.
But I think that really covers IE9.
You know, support for HTML5, how is the new IE9 with that?
It's actually supposed to work very good. It supports Canvas now. I'm pretty sure they're going to be using WebM for video.
Really?
I'm pretty sure they were looking at that bandwagon last time I looked, and that was a few months ago. So that's right when everybody was talking about WebM, and I think Firefox and Chrome and everybody was looking at that because of the H.264.
Yeah, well, let's see if you know, Apple, if they can knock down Apple's shine with the H.264.
Well,
let's
look at the facts.
Yeah.
Most folks that use a browser aren't using Safari, so they don't really have a lot of voting space. If these other characters choose to use WebM, okay?
Mm-hmm. Browsers.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Is Safari really going to have a choice? What do you think? Or are they gonna stick their heads out on the chopping block like they have with the iPhone and the iPad and close their environment and do whatever they want?
I think Apple is stubborn. I think they're gonna stay to H.264 despite the fact that Apple has never been a company that bends to the crowd. Quite opposite. They've been a company that's been successful by doing something different, right?
Yeah, but we're not talking about proprietary software here. We're talking about open, standardized, you know,
yeah,
environments.
Like a standardized codec. Well,
do you think they would?
We'll see. I don't know, because the iPad and with the iPad and the iPhone, they seem to think that they have a lot of say with that kind of stuff.
And they do. They're really not really the only competitor. I mean, Android just passed iPhone, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Open is moving in.
Yeah, in terms of sales, yeah.
Yeah. Open is moving in. I mean, it's camping out right there with the closed network and systems that
I hope
Apple
that they do.
Created.
I hope that they do.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, we'll see. It'll be easier, you know, to be able to have WebM for the iPhone and WebM for the iPad and for all your Macs and not have to worry about it, you know, and it be a consumer. Like it, that will be ideal for the consumer. I hope that they do, but we'll see. You never know that. So.
Right, and then I have another article here that's interesting. HTML5 boilerplate, and you can that's the actual URL. It's HTML5 boilerplate.com, and you can go to that. And it's really nice. I've just glanced over. I haven't used it yet, but it's basically a pre-templated document, set of documents and files that will essentially work out a lot of browser bugs. It has like CSS reset pre-built in. And this has been built by Paul Irish and another fella, and I can't pronounce his/her name unless you can. But you just go to the site.
Divya Munyan or something like that.
Yeah, but I'm going to butcher it if I try to say it. Just go to the site and check it out. Really, really nice.
Well, basically, give me the gist of it. I glanced through it also. But basically, what it looks like is a group of code sets. You know, CSS, HTML, ready HTML5 code, JavaScript. You know, snippets of best practice code all rolled up in one so that you can use it at will. It's not a framework, but it's, you know, just this conglomerate or this collection of code sets.
Right. In most projects, you use these things anyways.
Yeah, like...
You know, there are some that you might not be familiar with because they're going to give you support for, like, HTML5 and CSS3 things. And not a lot of projects that the common day Joe is going to use, but they're all prepackaged in this, and you can use what you need to.
Like reset. It has reset in there, I noticed.
And it's also open source. It's on GitHub, so I'm assuming it's open source. I'll click on the link just to make sure. But you can go to GitHub, download this thing, and really do whatever you want with it, and build yourself a boilerplate that'll give you access to a lot of these things. Remember, it's HTML5 boilerplate. So this is to help you use HTML5. If you're not ready for HTML5 for some reason, obviously this boilerplate isn't going to be for you.
I'm getting there.
Hey.
I'm actually starting to look at, you know, HTML5. Yeah. I think, you know, with the browsers really starting to pick up on these things, and heck, I looked at the latest browser statistics. A lot of my clients are near 6%. And
right.
I saw one was at like even 2% IE6.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're moving through browsers faster, so we might be able. It might just be that we can support HTML5 a lot faster,
right,
than we think. You know, I'm
you know,
excited
the
about
saying
that.
Is it's going to be 2022 is when the spec is going to be 2B basically not, I won't say finalized, but I guess recommended. I'm not sure what it has to. I'm not totally up to speed on how exactly the W3C moves a spec through, you know, a draft recommendation to finalized or however they want to do it, because CSS 2.1, I don't even think is finalized. Don't take my word on that, but for some reason I feel like it's there are certain parts of that spec that aren't completely finished.
Well, I don't think it even matters now.
Right, I mean, it comes down to implementation.
Yeah, really. Yeah. What it comes down to is browser support and adoption and, you know, how accessible it's going to be for the majority of folks out there, you know.
Right.
If browsers are supporting it and, you know, folks are using browsers that can support it, why not? If it's going to make our development easier, why not? You know, I mean, heck, we're phasing IE6 out. That I just feel that coming very, very soon. That's nice.
The phasing of IE6, you know, and I always hate to get on the topic of IE6 because it feels like it swings around.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, when you're talking about just any old browser period, you know, or any type of viewing device, you're always looking at your statistics of your site. Who's using it? What are they using to view, you know, the site? How are they using it? So all these things are based on that. And HTML5, because it's backwards compatible, lets you use that no matter what device and enhance the user experience and just the increase the functionality of your site. So you can get access to these cool APIs that are also associated with HTML5, like geolocations and that kind of thing, which is not HTML5, it's its own API, but, you know, it's good stuff.
HTML5 with geolocations.
I have a feeling we're going to be talking about HTML5 a lot. You know, that's really the upcoming thing, and it's here. I mean, it's here to stay, for sure.
Well, and we have tools now cropping
right up,
like this boilerplate.
You showed me another app, the font thing. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, the Google Font tool. Now, what's the name of it?
You had it on your computer here.
Gosh, I find these things, and I look through them, and I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool, and then I forget the names of them, because like I said, I have massive ADD.
But what is this thing? It's like it's an application that Google set up that allows you to basically edit fonts live in the browser, right? You can change the font size.
You can pick out your font. You can
the line height, the word spacing, you know, everything.
It's called Font Directory. It's in beta. Google Font Directory. And it's at code.google.com/webfonts/preview.
Right.
Or I think you can just go to /webfonts.
Right. And this gives you access to the code. It generates code for you whenever you make changes.
Yep. It shows you the code in real time as you select, you know, the options. And
to me, it looks like it's using the jQuery UI. Just because of the slider they have on there, but I wouldn't doubt that they made that themselves. But it really does look like they're using jQuery to run this site.
Let's see. Yep, they are.
But
jQuery UI 1.8.
Yeah. So, you know, it's
kind of nice to see that a big company.
So
like
it's basically going to work in older browsers, is my assumption. So this should be a cool tool to check out, and we'll throw a link up on the show notes for you to check out.
Yeah.
It's definitely pretty cool. You can change different font families and everything. So, is there anything else, or does that wrap up the show today? It's a little bit shorter of a show. But
no, today, there's one last thing, Kevin.
Oh.
There is one last thing.
Oh.
You forgot it, huh?
Yeah. Should we save it for next time?
Yeah, why not? Let's just go over it now and
okay.
It's my
okay.
time to
let's,
go.
Let's
but
do
you
it.
Like my Steve Jobs impression, right? There is one last thing. You like that, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Well, hosting. Okay, me and Kevin have some differences in our opinion of hosting and whether a web designer and developer should do their own hosting. I'm a freelance.
We're talking about hosting for the client. You hosting the client's website, not just hosting your own site.
Well, yeah. That's exactly what I mean. I'm a freelance web designer and developer, and so is Kevin. And we deal with small to medium businesses. And many times when I'm approached with a client, they don't have a hosting solution. Some of them do, some of them don't. And I like to be the one-stop shop as far as providing them, you know, providing them everything that they need to be on the web, you know, rather than having to shop around and find a web host or what have you. Kevin feels otherwise. He feels that they should find their hosting. He doesn't want to deal with the hosting at all.
Right. I'll help clients set up their hosting. Okay.
Right.
But I don't want to actually own the account of their hosting or their domain. What I've run into is usually with these smaller clients is some other freelancer would have set up their account, okay, and he has their domain and their hosting, and when it comes time to upgrade their site, I have to go through all this garbage to transfer the domain over to a new hosting account and all this other stuff, and it's a pain for the client, you know. And so if a client for some reason decides to go with another company, let's say they want to get Happy Cog or some really nice shop to do it, I want them to be able to have access to that stuff without having to, you know, come knock on my door. And it gives them more control, even though they have less experience. And so I want the client to have their domain and everything tangible in their own hands, you know.
Right.
And
right.
It's really a different business model, you know.
Well, they,
I think what you want to do, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is you're looking to basically, because they're already calling you to do everything anyways.
Right.
You know, they're not going to end up calling, if they use GoDaddy, GoDaddy. They're going to end up calling you because they don't normally know what's going on most of the time, right? You know, and not to say they're not intelligent.
That was
know.
A slamming. I just got to say that, dude.
Yeah, well, you were hungry, so everything tasted
good. Dude, I am a content mug right now. Woo! Anyway, go ahead. What were you saying?
All I'm saying is, you know, from what I take is, you want to be able to, your client to be able to call you and say, hey, Jonas, we need this, and you want to be able to do it. And you want it to be comfortable for them while they're under your care. But as soon as they leave your care, it may become slightly less comfortable is what I would think, because anytime you have to transfer or do any extra work to obtain something, it's going to put you a little less comfortable, or at least for whoever's trying to reclaim. For example,
okay,
the current client I have, I'll just go ahead and tell
this. Let's get a good clear example. Your current client, right?
Right.
Say like they were my client before and I hosted them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I hosted them. I took over their website. And they decided they just wanted to move on and they liked your idea better or what have you. And they just decided to go move on. Okay, now let's go. What were you going to say? With that in mind, your client what?
I'm sorry. I totally zoned out just then.
Okay.
I don't know what
you
said.
Here's a scenario. Okay.
Here's the ADD kicking in right there.
The current...
I tell you, I saw a butterfly or something. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, right. Hey, what's that? Oh, that's blue. Check out those walls, right? Yeah. Anyway.
Hit me again. One more time.
Here's a scenario, okay? I hosted a client. I'm hosting a client. I did their website. And for some reason, you had the opportunity to talk to them. Now, granted, you and I have agreements not to, go poaching on each other's clients or what have you, but say, like, you're Joe Designer that I've never met, okay? And they decide to go with you, and now you have to go through the process of changing their host?
Right. I have to set up a new hosting account.
Why? Why can't you just go through me?
See, I could go through you, but
right.
Then I'm going to get slammed with your extra charges, right?
You are? Or the client?
If I'm using your host, right? You're initially, because you have to do support now since I'm going through you, you're going to end up having to charge me, say, $5 extra a month, right?
No.
Right, okay. You buy hosting for $12 a month, right?
No.
Now we're confused. We're using examples and we're not clear.
Okay. I have a master account, right?
Right.
Be a dedicated server, a reseller account. That's what guys... a lot of guys like me commonly do. We either get a reseller account or we get a dedicated server and we host all of our clients
right
on that server, and we charge them a monthly fee. That monthly fee stays the same no matter whether they go with you or with me or with some other designer
right
down the road. They have a certain amount that they'll pay for web hosting. What they will no longer be paying for is maintenance to their website. Like, I won't be updating
okay
their website.
See, a lot of folks that I would deal with wouldn't do it that way. You know, they would just say, okay, client, you're going to pay me $25 a month because I know how to do it and you don't. But that's not what you're doing.
Wait.
Right. What I'm saying is, a lot of folks that I've dealt with in the past, usually what they do is they have their own hosting and they're like, well, I want to make some extra money each month, so I'm going to charge my client $5 extra a month on top of what they would normally pay, so I can make $5 extra a month on top of the hosting.
Well, it depends on what you're charging them.
Right,
yeah.
But essentially, a lot of freelancers that do the hosting deal for their clients are trying to make an extra buck to land the maintenance deal, basically.
Of course.
And
we're hosting
easy,
because we want to make extra money.
And it's easier for the client until the point that it comes time to move on or, you know, set up a new hosting plan.
Now, that depends.
Right.
That depends on the ethics of the web designer.
Right. And do you want your site and your domain that you may have bought 15 years ago? I mean, that's very valuable, you know, to hang in the clutch or in the grip of a web designer that you haven't spoken to for 7 years.
Well,
know?
Legally, the web designer doesn't have rights to that domain name if you're the
right
one that's been paying for that domain name. Domain names and hosting are different.
Right, you've been paying for the domain name, but the freelancer usually is the one that's going to have set up the domain. If you're using your account on GoDaddy and you purchase the domain for a client,
mm-hmm,
you own that domain. That is your domain. You're just leasing it to your client at that point.
Right.
And so you run into this issue, which I don't want to run into with my clients, is where I'm going to have to transfer that domain over to them, and it's just one more step in a process that I just don't like it.
I would think that any designer with ethics would relinquish the domain,
right,
if they're doing that. Now,
right,
I do,
but is that
a
peace of mind for you, the client, though? Like, you're basically asking them to trust you, you know, to not do that and to be ethical. And I guess it comes down to what the client, you know, it's going to come down to what the client thinks. But to me, it just seems more peace of mind off the bat if I just tell them, hey, you're going to own this and it's going to be yours.
Right. And, you know, I've been in the industry for close to 7 years, and I generally don't run into these kind of issues.
Right.
You know, the issues that you're cropping up and you're telling me about, I don't run into. Are you actually running into these issues? Or are these issues that you've heard about?
The reason I do this is for peace of mind for the client, number one. And also because I don't want a client calling me 5 years from now saying, hey, do you remember me? You know, I want my domain back. You know, I'm like, what's going on? You know?
Well,
this is for my own, so I don't get fatigued with 20 domains that I don't have.
Right.
You know,
right.
And if they own it, then I don't have to worry about it. Like, if a client relationship ends for some reason, I don't have to sit down and think about, okay, now I have to get this domain off my chest so they have it, because, you know, I don't want to deal with their domain anymore and carry it on. You know, I don't, like you say, it comes down to a difference in opinion,
right?
Right. Obviously.
I think you're worrying about something that's not really, you know, the clients that generally what I've been doing lately is I just set up their own GoDaddy account, and I have them purchase their domain name with me there, and they're the owners of the domain.
That's what I do.
Yeah, and I don't.
I help them set up the account.
You know,
I'm not in charge of it.
Right.
It is not under my credit card, and it's not under my name, so they own it.
Heck, if that domain name, you know, if they fail to renew that domain name and they still think that it's your responsibility, I guarantee there are some unreasonable folks out there that will say, hey, you know, why is my site down? Because it didn't renew. You know,
right.
Yeah, sure, you have you you can say, well, you actually own the domain. That was on you to renew it. But
as long as they're your client, though, you're going to take care of that. It's after they're no longer your client.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, you know, this is with the
and
assumption
and a lot
that,
of these services, and I don't want, if clients are listening to this, I don't want clients to think that their domain's going to disappear, because any service that you sign up for today now auto-renews their domain.
Kevin, you're assuming that when a client leaves your services, that there's bad blood.
No, I'm not. I'm not at all. I'm simply saying that when a client is to leave my services, there's less transitional cost to both parties.
Yeah.
Meaning that they own those credentials, and it's going to be much easier for them to move their site along to the next person versus having to transfer all that off of me,
right,
and my hosting. That's what I'm trying to create here.
Right.
I'm trying to create an easy transitional step when it comes that time.
Yeah,
that's all I'm doing.
For me, that's really just been a non-issue.
Right.
You know, if a client wants to transition for some reason, I just simply transfer the domain. You know, ask them if they want to continue hosting. If they don't, you know, that's fine. It's really just been a non-issue.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's been a wonderful thing hosting for my clients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the best service is the service that, well, if a client has email problems or hosting problems, you know, you hear from them constantly, right? Or that's a client that's always calling their hosting company or the person hosting, or what have
right.
you. That's an indicator that that's poor hosting service.
Right.
A good indicator of good hosting service is if the client never has to pick up a phone and call you with an issue, right? It's just seamless and it works. That generally has been how hosting is for me.
Right.
I host the clients. I charge them a monthly fee. They don't worry about it. I take care of everything for them. And I'm making good money from it.
Right.
You know, it's been a fantastic experience for both of us. We haven't had issues. I have had clients decide that they wanted to move on and go somewhere else.
Right.
That's fine. There's no problem with that.
Right.
You know, then we simply transfer their domain, or they can choose to point their domain to another server if, you know, they have the control that you said.
Right.
Right.
I mean, I always supply support. If I'm helping my client their site, I always supply the support to call GoDaddy or whoever it is that works with them to use their account. And normally I have their account information, so I can do that.
Right.
You know, the only difference, I think, between what you do and what I do, and I could be wrong here because you may end up actually doing the same as I do, we just don't understand each other here, is I put everything under their name, and their account is on their credit card, and however they want to do it.
Domain name, not...
The domain and their hosting.
Right.
Obviously, you have your own server that you host everybody from. But their domain and everything, I set up, and I interface to GoDaddy, and they work through me usually. Just because I don't normally get a lot of phone calls about it unless I'm transferring over from one company to now my company.
Right.
So, you know, like I said, for me, it's a transitional issue. You know, there's different views on it. And I don't really think, when it comes down to our discussion today, I don't really think there's a right
or a
wrong way to do this. There is simply, as long as the process that you set up works for your clients and makes them happy and gives them what they need at the time that they need it, then I think you're good to go.
That's what it boils down to, really, is client satisfaction. And for me,
right, exactly,
you know, I'm dealing with a client who is hosting with a third-party provider. We're constantly having problems. To me, there's also peace of mind that I could just take care of the things
right
with the hosting immediately, and the client doesn't even have to hear about it.
Right.
You know, I can just take care of it, and that's it. It's really been a great experience. In fact, hey, if you don't want to host, you can bring all your clients over to me, and I can host them. I'll be happy to make that money.
Yeah. So I think that wraps up the show. It's a little bit long today, but I think we had some good topics here. And
yeah, great.
You know.
Great podcast. Awesome. We'll have all of this stuff on the show notes, as usual. You can find both Kevin and I on Twitter, me at Jive.
And at Kevin D's to find me.
Right. I'm also going to throw this out here. Kevin and I are doing a few things. I'm starting up a little cohort group. Follow at Madhouse. We'll get into more detail about that later.
Okay.
But at Madhouse, at Madhouse Co-Works.
Yep.
With an S at the end, at Madhouse Co-Works. I own both, but for branding purposes, I like Madhouse Co-Works.
Right.
You know, follow that. And you can contact us on your Twitter. Have anything to add, Kevin?
I think that's it for the show today.
You guys have a fantastic week, and we'll
yep.
see you next week.
Bye.